Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we turn our attention to the candidates who are running for city council from Spokane's Northwest District. The seat is held by Karen Stratton, and she's running for re-election. She has five challengers. As of now, we've interviewed four of them. We'll talk with Stratton tomorrow. Today, we'll hear from one of those challengers, Christopher Savage. We have several of our candidate interviews up on our webpage. You can go and listen to them anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Go to the Inland Journal page or click on the Regional News tab and then on Election 2019. We'll be adding one interview a day. Christopher Savage is a Lyft driver who lives on the 5 Mile Prairie.
I'm a ride for hire. I pick up people from around town and drive them to their destinations, wherever they may be, in a safe and efficient manner. I try to be as polite and, you know, cordial as possible. I'm very proud of my 5-star rating. I've had it for about a year now, and I've had over 1,000 rides, and so that's why I have this jacket on. I feel very proud of that because, you know, I feel proud that I've been able to take people around Spokane that are literally my neighbors and getting them to their, you know, destination safely, and hopefully they have fun there and all that stuff. So
the idea of Lyft regulations and Uber regulations versus the cabbies and all that sort of thing came before the city council in the last year or so. Were you active or part of those discussions about?
I wish I was. Our advocate or our lobbyist, it's probably bad to say it that way, that was supposed to be for city council, didn't give out like a blast of email. So unfortunately, I wasn't there when that decision was made, or I would have been there saying this is not what should be done. Essentially, what should be done is the cabbies should be not, you know, they shouldn't have the regulation of having the city tax on them. They should be able to not pay that, so they're competitive with Lyft and Uber, so that everyone has the same playing field, rather than bringing Lyft and Uber up to saying, hey, now you guys need to have this, I think it's around $350 license a year for it. And yes, there are some stipulations that you can try stuff out before paying for it, but still, I would have rather taken the no hail ordinance as well off for the cabbies so that, you know, they could be competitive with Lyft and Uber.
So a little more libertarian than
yeah, a little bit more with that in regards to that.
So how would you explain your political views? I mean, what are kind of your core principles in terms of how you view the world?
Currently, I think it's fiscally conservative and trying a little on the edge of socially progressive right now. I'm kind of worried about I'm part of the Democratic Party right now as a precinct committee officer, and with certain things happening at a federal level, it makes me worried about the local level, what's happening with that kind of thing.
Anything in particular that you're worried about?
At the last Democratic major party we had last, I think it was last December, it was last quarter, they did an election for all the executive board positions, and they made it a stipulation for everyone to, for each position to either be a man, a male, and transgender, rather than being on whether it's on their ability, which, I mean, I don't care what you do or what you identify as, I just want you to be good at your job. So that's where I was kind of a little bit worried about saying at the federal level and not really going towards the local level, because I've talked with some of the local people and they're really nice people. So I think they're just trying to do the best thing for everyone possible. But I would disagree with that.
So is this your first run for elected office?
For the city, kind of. I mean, I've been doing elections before. I mean, in high school, I was the ASB treasurer for 2 years. After that, I was an art residence hall representative that represented my hall on the campus of Western Washington University went to, then, which led to me being a residence hall association president, which governed 4,400 students that lived on campus. So I've been doing this for a while. I've gone to a lot of meetings. I went to a lot of meetings in college where it was dining committee, student senate, just stuff where you get more involved and you understand what's going on in the government so you can make the right decisions. So that's the previous stuff that I've been in. It'll probably be odd if people look at it where I have a gap of 8 years where I haven't been doing anything. The reason for that is I've had a chronic ailment that I've just been able to get under control. So that's kind of why I've been under the radar for the past 8 years, because originally I was trying to do this earlier.
So what finally pushed you over the threshold to say I want to run for city council?
A lot of bad decisions being made at the city government level, and also personally, just family issues being, you know, happening in the past 2 years. I originally was going to run against Candace Mum in 2017, but my father passed during that year, so it kind of postponed that for about 2 more years. And now I feel that I'm ready, because not only would I want to do it for the citizens, but I feel it may be a little self-serving, but I kind of feel like I want to do it as, you know, it would make my father proud.
So you talked about several bad decisions. Why don't you name a few of those just to give us an idea?
On a small basis, like the $30,000 given to the day passes for the homeless population. even if that was a good idea, people who are looking into the matter currently show that there's been a misappropriation of funds, about at least 20 grand of it, which meaning only 10,000 of it was used for those kind of situations. At the bigger level, the one thing that I really don't like is Sportsplex. I mean, if people want it, I would like private investment. I wouldn't want public funds put into it. And that's what I really don't like is the real estate excise tax fund, which is the taxes that are pretty much being gathered from all the people moving in and the influx of the booming housing industry is being put into that Sportsplex, which is about $5 million, or I think that's about it. But it was quite a bit of the actual fund, which there's very little left. And in my mind, and actually put in the spokesman review, they said that they were going to use it for schools and roads, which isn't being done currently. And as you can see, we definitely need it for the schools and roads with what's currently happening.
So are we talking about the Sportsplex that is planned for downtown, or are we talking about the city stadium that is that the school board said should be built by Albee Stadium?
The Sportsplex downtown on the North Bank.
Okay. Should be just private funding in as part of that?
Yes, I would have no problem if there is a couple of private citizens who really want to think this is a good job economically for Spokane. And if, you know, guess if I was wrong, if I was in government and it happened to be, well, the government could buy it off them and say, you know what, thank you for putting the initial investment in. We want to buy it off you to keep on doing this. It was a great thing for the city. And I just don't like this kind of ramrodding it down where it seems like people don't really want it. And that's why I think the Fieldplex over by Joe Albee was initially picked behind. Honestly, people didn't want that in the first place either. So it's kind of interesting that those things are going with what they're doing and being rammed down the people's throat rather than being, you know, saying, okay, maybe this is not what they want.
So, Christopher, let's look at Spokane's homeless situation in terms of homelessness becoming perhaps more visible around the city. Mm-hmm. How do you view it? How do you view how the city has responded to it?
I don't think the city has responded well to it. We've wasted $22.5 million of the taxpayers' money over the past 2 years on, it seems like, wasted social programs to help these people out with the warming shelters, which haven't been doing well, or they're not at capacity, or they're just not well-run operations, meaning that this money is being wasted. And it's not good. And
help me understand that a little. How has it been wasted? If people have been housed and kept warm on cold nights, how is that a waste?
I guess that's not a waste, but it's more about, I guess, it seems like we're taking more money from the people who pay into the taxpayer system than actual people who we're helping. And I want to first have the priority of people who have lived here and paid taxes into here. And yes, there may be homeless people out there like that, but some of them are not from here, and I would want to prioritize people like the homeless veterans or homeless people who are from Spokane first rather than the people that seem to be out there that may be from other places. And that's why I feel like it's not being spent in the correct ways. These funds are being spent towards people who are either out of state or from out of the city, and I don't want to prioritize those people yet.
How would you figure out which people who are out on the who are out on the streets come from other places or not? How do you segregate them so that you give some of them care and some of them tough out of luck?
Probably just asking where they're coming from and ask to see if they probably have a driver's license or form of residency to show that they've been somewhere so that we can at least say, hey, they're actually here and they actually did pay taxes in the system. And I would more think it would be just that asking them pretty much, you know, where have you come from? Because if they're lying, then it wouldn't be within their best interest. So I think, you know, why would they lie to us? So I think that would be better, is to go down there and just ask them, which people have done. I mean, Mike Fagan would be the best example, but he has done some research on it. And not only that, but the Spokesman Review, I think, just did a, I don't know if it was a point in time thing, but they did an article about there are people being bused into Spokane, but it's not that many. So that's where some of the things I have. Yes, I want to help the people here, but there are some people that may be mixing in with that. That's not good. So,
is it the city's role to own warming shelters or to work with churches and others to run warming shelters? What's the city's role in taking care of those people?
I think actually the city is doing pretty well with the resources it has so far. I mean, this isn't something I'm proud of, but over the past years when I was chronically ill, I had to go on state assistance. And by going through the state assistance, I realized that for what they gave me, it was more than enough. And there are there are so many resources out there for mental health, for housing. Spokane Housing Authority, you can get a housing voucher yes, there's a small amount that are given out, but you can put into the application. That means, you know, you can get online, meaning, you know, I guess if people don't have a computer, they go down to the libraries or stuff that's open to the public. So it's stuff like that where I feel like we have everything we already need. It's just not being used in the right way.
Do you view people who may have a drug addiction versus somebody who lost their job and lost their homes. Do you view the different people who have different reasons for being homelessness differently?
Yes.
Do you?
Yes. I feel that someone who's down on their luck because of either drug or alcohol may not be as prioritized in my mind as a person who is down on their luck, who is paying their taxes, who's, you know, a single parent who has children to feed for, and, you know, that they show that they're being responsible and they're just, you know, drowning. So I feel like there's a way to differentiate between those people.
You think Spokane's suffering from compassion fatigue right now?
A little bit.
Through the homelessness?
Because, I mean, we wouldn't be doing this. We're not a bad city. We want to do what's right for people. And I think that's what everyone's getting angry is. Everyone either wants to go in several different directions or the stuff that we have been doing hasn't been working. And we just want to help these people because no one wants to be, you know, no one wants to enjoy others' suffering. I mean, I personally don't want to enjoy anyone else's suffering. I want to live by other one's happiness. So I feel like I think that's an apt word for saying it. We have, you know, passion fatigue because things aren't just working out. We want to see some kind of result happening.
Yeah. Okay. So what sorts of policies would you advocate for then in terms of homelessness as a council member?
I would advocate for, this may be a little controversial, for more UGM-like policies. I've seen several people who've come to city council and testify where it's been so moving where they say, you know, I was living next to a dumpster, I was drinking, and if it wasn't for people like this saying, you know, what you're doing for yourself right now isn't the best, let us try to help you with that. Because when you're in that kind of state of mind, you're not really making the best decision for yourself. So by giving the resources that you're asking for may not be within your best interest. So I would kind of go towards private industry, or not industry, but private enterprises like UGM, where maybe a little bit more with the thing. But I go along the thing where you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. You teach a man to fish, you feed him for life. So more stuff like that where you don't just give people something. You actually enable them to do something so you don't have to keep coming back to see if they're doing okay.
So in other words, we'll give you help if you do this to help yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I mean, personally, that that's why I love my father so much is if he hadn't have done some tough love things for me, I don't know if I would be here right now trying to, you know, run for office. I would have probably been doing what I wanted, trying to feel better because of the chronic pain I was feeling.
We're talking with Christopher Savage. He's one of six candidates for the Northwest City Council seat now held by Karen Stratton. So let's evaluate the current elected leadership. Mm-hmm. What's going well and where do you think changes are needed?
One thing that I find very admirable, I have my personal differences with Kate Burke, is I really like how she brings out voter registration for people. I really want people to be politically participate here in our city. I mean, the more people that vote, the more it legitimizes our government. I feel that is amazing that she does that. I feel like she's one of the few council members that do that. I mean, I have problems with their social policies, but other than that, one thing that I do have a problem with is the attendance record. Within our bylaws, you're literally only paid to go to these meetings once a week that are at the city council to vote. And sometimes these people aren't going to these meetings and they're going to other places for photo ops or other things that aren't as important as they should be. And like with certain council members, they haven't reached the four consecutive meeting limit, but once that is met, they can be voted off the council. And some of them have gotten really close to that. And for me, you shouldn't miss one meeting unless you are either really sick or you have a death in the family or family emergency.
So to be clear, you're saying that council members who miss four consecutive meetings should be eligible to be booted off because they're not doing their job.
That's already in the bylaws.
Okay.
So someone could put a motion forward once that is satisfied, and then they can vote on it. Whether that happens or not, I don't think it will, but that's what happens. And that's one of the things that, I mean, I'm really critical of is when you're not there and you're not voting, how are you representing your district?
So this is a city council that has, if you want to use the label, six progressives and one conservative, mm-hmm. and they talk about there's not enough balance on this city council. Do you agree with that?
Agreed. I don't like supermajorities. I like balance because even if I want something, I want someone to say, hey, is this a good idea? So it makes me think about, well, is it a good idea? And then it also makes the ideas compete to make both stronger. So I feel like if there's more balance on there, it will help stronger ideas come forward rather than just rubber stamping everything that goes through that is, you know, brought up.
But the people elected six of those seven council members, the people elected to have a progressive council. I mean, is there a better way to do it then?
Well, and that's the thing why I like the voter registration with Kate Burke does. If you look at how politically motivated people are, people don't vote enough. And that's where I feel where, yes, the people voted, but it was a small part of the registered voter. So in my mind, even if I was, you know, voted in there, I would say technically I'm not really legitimate enough because there's a minority that's voting in when there should be a majority. So, yes, they were voted in, but technically it's by a small majority. in my opinion.
Well, so Spokane has a vote by district system. You're running in the Northwest District. Do you like the vote by district idea, or do you think council members should be elected from at large as from the city as a whole?
No, I think it should stay the district model. I mean, going out to the whole district would then kind of make it the same as the council president. Then it would kind of be combining roles in my mind, I feel like. And also there's on the horizon, I don't know if this is going to be well or not, but Jay Inslee is trying to increase our county commissioners, so there's going to be more representative at least at that level. So I think it's good as it is currently.
Okay. Well, I'll just correct. It wasn't Jay Inslee. It was our state legislators who voted the county commission change.
Oh, thank you. My apologies.
So in terms of the Northwest District, what are the most important issues for your district do you think that you would advocate for as a representative from that district?
Infrastructure. We really need to focus on spending and maintaining all the roads and the sidewalks that are going on there. I mean, there's a development that just popped up by my house that it's 2 years in and the road is already crumbling, and that shouldn't be happening. They should at least be standing for at least 10 to 20 years. So I don't know what's going on. I think there's some experiment stuffing happening with permeable asphalt that may be leading to that kind of stuff, which I guess would be good because you know it's going into the aquifer, but again, then now it's causing the streets to degrade. Well, and if that's the case, then we need to put more money into maintenance. So I feel like that's one of the main important things, you know, adding bike lanes and having networks and actual more infrastructure out there. So like with Francis and Indian Trail, if an emergency happens, there's very little ways out of there. So there needs to be more roads that are connecting one another in and out of there, because if something bad happens, it's not going to be good.
Monroe Street is also in your district, I believe. Yes. Is it not? Mm-hmm. So what did you think about the project to cut Monroe from essentially four lanes to three and then add essentially move the sidewalks a little farther out? What did you think about that project?
I was personally against it. I went to the several meetings that they had, especially the one they had at Knox Presbyterian Church. And it was interesting because all the stuff they had for the residents there, over 50% didn't want it. And then I think it was actually 60%. And then the businesses, they were over 50%, didn't want it either. So that's where I was confused at why it went through and why I was personally against it. Because as more people are coming in, why are we reducing the lanes and the roads? Which means it's counterintuitive to me. When we have more people coming in, you want more roads to kind of add that influx. Yes, it's good that we have slower areas there, so now it's more of a promenade and people can walk through. But I think it sacrificed the economy of that kind of area where people can move more fluidly in there. And plus the swale thing that they put in there at the top of it, I personally didn't like that. I liked the more natural features beforehand, and that would have just saved us money anyways.
Okay. So our county and city officials are talking about potentially building a new county jail. They're going through the process of evaluating and that sort of thing. What do you think about the reforms that are taking place to reduce the population of the jail? What's your view about a potential new county jail?
It's very difficult because the new one was – or the one that we just have was done in 1995 or the mid-90s, I think.
Mid-80s.
Right? Mid-80s. Yeah. So it's due for a renovation. So it's just a lot of money, so that's why I'm really apprehensive on it. I think I need to look more into the subject. I'm not currently as red as I would like to be, but because it's a very, very deep issue, because not only does it affect the taxpayers, but it also affects the inmates who are in there that need to have a certain standard of care rather than just – throwing someone away.
Do you view Spokane as a safe city?
Certain areas I do. And I think that has always been the case. You know, there's always been great sides to Spokane. There's always been rougher sides to Spokane. But, you know, if you have your head about you and you're smart with what you do, I feel like you can walk in Spokane and be okay.
Where do you think the Spokane's police department, where do you think public safety is in a good place in Spokane? Where does it need work?
I think we need a lot more of the structure and police officers on the street to help with a lot of the stuff happening. I mean, there's a loss of actual police officers that we need, and there's actually more going to retire. So in my mind, that almost leaves, you know, I mean, I think we're all going to be cordial with one another. But again, if the police force isn't there to help out when something bad happens, then it may lead to something worse. And I think that's what may be, I think I'm talking about.
So the voters recently voted to put more money toward police and fire. Did you support that ballot measure?
Yes, I did. I wouldn't have added the initiative that added the mental health counselors on there. I feel that's a superfluous or over bureaucratic kind of move for the state to do.
police officers have a pretty tough job, and mental health counselor seems to be one of those that they're doing more and more. Do you think police officers, there should be more help to provide them with evaluating mental health issues on the street? Is that something that the city should spend money on, or is that something somebody else should spend money on?
I think the city should spend money on that, because I feel that the I'm not really putting it towards the mental counselor that I just, you know, said once there, but actually providing classes that teach them the actual skills so they don't have to have a person with them. They actually have the things needed for them to do it on their own.
Okay. So growth on the West Plains. We've got Amazon is building its fulfillment center out there. There's lots going on. How should the city approach the problems that come with it in terms of the growth problems, housing, infrastructure, that sort of thing? Should the city how should the city be working on that?
I think the city is already doing something already where they're expanding Geiger Boulevard to maybe repave it or help out with that. Again, when they say repave, I'm a little skeptical because I don't want the new pavement to be worse than the actual one there. But I do believe that, you know, the city needs to be responsible for building infrastructure to connect to that business, because once that business is connected, it will, you know, bleed out into the surrounding areas. That will be great for the local economy.
Does the city have a role, for example, in trying to build more housing out there, or in terms of the city owning housing, or the city with incentives for others to build housing?
Yes, I think they should be responsible for it. But I feel that one of the things that they should have not done or should be working on is trying to remove the urban growth and development area that is literally boxing all of the property into Spokane. If once we remove that, I feel like one, it will increase the supply of housing or the availability to housing, which once that satisfies demand, it will bring down the prices, which that's what we're all looking for, is we want low housing costs. And I feel like doing that on an economic level is better than trying to ramrod it in the way we're doing, where we're trying to say you can only build here, you can only build here, you can only build here, rather than we need to have more saying of you can be free to build outside of this area.
And what about low-income housing? The city has sort of loosened its guidelines a little bit to allow more condominiums to be built, that sort of thing. Should the city be doing more to encourage the growth of quote-unquote low-income housing?
Yes and no, because I don't want them to support it too much where they oversupply low housing and then there isn't demand to support that. So I feel like there should be a balance between trying to figure out where that sweet spot is.
You think there's a worry that we'd build too much low-income housing?
Yes, because I feel that some people may like that initially, but I think everyone wants, and it may sound a little hokey, the American dream, and the American dream, you know, is not really within low-income housing. It is a middle-class kind of lifestyle, and again, middle-class isn't low-income, so I feel, yes, they should be doing a little bit, but not too much, because I feel that's just a stepping stone on what most people want in their lives of, you know, corresponding, you know, wealth and prosperity.
So let's give you the chance to talk about the issues that are important, most important to you.
One is, you know, the I just said before, is the attendance. I mean, that's paramount in my mind, because if you're not attending these meetings, then you're not representing your constituents, and you're paid pretty well. As I found out through the Salary Review Commission, that you're supposed to be there. I mean, with the amount that you're given, you're paid way more than a lot of the middle-income families here in Spokane. So there should be really no excuse of why you shouldn't be going there. I mean, there's other people who, you know, go to their jobs and, you know, they don't go there 50% of the time and still get paid 100% of it. I mean, and that's what the city council members are doing. And that's what I really want to, you know, rail on, is because that's you just got to be there. I mean, that's why it kind of sounds hokey, but that's the reason why we became a nation as we are, because we didn't have any representation over the English Parliament. So if there's no representation, how are you supposed to be a good leader?
Christopher Savage is one of six candidates for Spokane City Council in the Northwest District. On tomorrow's podcast, we'll talk with the incumbent, Karen Stratton. You can hear our full interviews with the candidates for Spokane City Office on our website. We're adding one a day until we've gone through that long list of candidates. You can find and listen to the interviews by clicking on the Regional News tab and then clicking on Election 2019, or just go to the Inland Journal page. Or you can get them by subscribing to the Inland Journal podcast in Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play. Send your comments and story ideas to Inland Journal at kpbx.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.